Welcome to Her Story, a project by Chick History. I'm your host, Rebecca Price. For 1 year, we asked 50 contemporary women to share the story of the historical woman who has inspired her. Join us every week for a new story of inspiration, from the headliners to the lesser-known gems.
Dust off the books, read all the letters, preserve with time. Dig out the truth written between the lines. Her history cannot be left behind. She shall not be forgotten.
Joining us today for Her Story number 33 is musician and activist Kathy Greer. Kathy is a singer-songwriter-guitarist who believes music crosses boundaries of ignorance and hate. Since 1999, she's performed with the Music Under New York program and is known as an NYC subway girl. Her groovy, folked-up blues provides the perfect soundtrack to the daily commuter's journey. Her website, nycsubwaygirl.com, features The Inspiration Project, where she spontaneously interviews people about what inspires them. Above ground, Kathy is open for Laura Nyro and Joan Armatrading, received an MTV Basement Tape Award, and has performed at such venues as the Avery Fisher Hall and BAM. She's been featured on the CBS Sunday Morning Show, and her career has spanned the globe. To learn more about Kathy, her music, and her work, you can visit her website, nycsubwaygirl.com, find her on Facebook, and follow her on Twitter at nycsubwaygirl. Kathy, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And which woman in history have you chosen to share with us today?
I chose the poet Edna St. Vincent Millay.
Well, please tell us all a little bit about Edna St. Vincent Millay.
Well, she's mostly unknown today, unfortunately, but she was the American poet of the early 20th century, and honestly, the most celebrated woman of her time. She was a rock star. And because of poetry, and I love that. And sonnets she wrote, too, which she wrote, "I will put chaos in 14 lines and keep them there." I love that. She had expression of love, and as her life advanced, her outspokenness in war. So for me, as a singer-songwriter who has both of those things in my writing, I'm intrigued by that. She was a legendary in her cross-country reading tours, reciting poems from memory. She had voracious letter writing from fans and friends, letters from Georgia O'Keeffe, visits with Laurence Olivier. She was photographed by Man Ray. And she had a lot of fame and, to some degree, quite a bit of wealth, especially because this was during the Great Depression. And people bought her works and came in droves to her reciting of her poems. But I discovered Vincent in the late 1990s. I was living in France, and I returned home to the U.S. and sort of looking to immerse myself in the American culture that I'd sort of left behind. I discovered this amazing biography by Nancy Milford on Vincent called Savage Beauty. And I was really taken by Vincent's poetic style and her artistic expression on and off the literary stage. So, again, because of my own life as a singer-songwriter who's always used the mic and my words to express my longings and my love, departure, my own activism against war and abuses, I was totally drawn in. But then I also learned that my mother told me that my grandfather, her father, loved to recite Millay's work. So I like to think as a young girl he was reciting to me Millay's work. But a few years later, when my partner and I were looking for a home in upstate New York, we discovered Millay's home called Steepletop in Austerlitz, New York. And there is a nonprofit organization called the Edna St. Vincent Millay Society at Steepletop, which is there to preserve the memory of Vincent's work. So I feel like I was clearly meant to follow the lines physically and lyrically of her life. So she was born in 1892 in Rockland, Maine. Cora, her mother, was often absent due to the hardship of the times and needing work. But she taught her three daughters to love music and literature. Edna was known as Vincent, and she got her name because her mother's brother was in some freak accident, trapped in the hold of a cargo ship with cotton bales on him for, like, I don't know, 10 days. And he was nursed back to life by the Sisters of Charity at the St. Vincent's Hospital. So that's how she got her name. And I love that, Edna St. Vincent Millay. Her mother figured prominently in her life, as did her two younger sisters, Norma and Kathleen, who was also a talented writer and poet, but unfortunately completely outshined by her elder sister, Vincent. And also, thanks to a lifetime of journaling and letter writing, preserved by her sister Norma, who inherited Vincent's estate, we have a very compelling and intriguing life to uncover. Vincent was also known for her lovers, both men and women. And I've really been intrigued by her early years, her mother wanting the best for her daughters and teaching them resilience and a fierce ability to survive. Cora, her mother, wrote, "I let the girls realize their poverty. I let them realize what every advantage cost me in the effort to live." So at 19, Vincent had already been writing quite a bit. Her poem, Renaissance, was published. And that was a really big deal. Her poems are musically lyrical. For me, they're full of cadence and sound. And I imagine that her mother teaching her music at an early age was really a perfect foundation for her poetry. Although her poems weren't put to music, she did have something to balance her words on. And she did later write a libretto to an opera called The King's Henchmen in 1927, which premiered at the Metropolitan Opera. She went to school at Vassar, where she was a patron of the arts, enabled her to do that. And supposedly, she was quite a renegade and broke every rule. Her first book of poetry was published in 1917, Renaissance and Other Stories. And in a second book in 1920 called A Few Figs from Thistles. So if you'd like, I'd love to read a couple of excerpts from that. There's this wonderful poem called First Fig. "My candle burns at both ends. It will not last the night. But ah, my foes, and oh, my friends, it gives a lovely light." She had a third book called Second April, published in 1921. And here you just see the developing of her art form and this, I think, brilliant piece called Assault. "I had forgotten how the frogs must sound after a year of silence. Else I think, I should not so have ventured forth alone at dusk upon this unfrequented road. I am awaylaid by beauty. Who will walk between me and the crying frogs? Oh, savage beauty, suffer me to pass, that am a timid woman on her way from one house to another." She was just amazing in the fact that she won, in 1923, she won a Pulitzer Prize in poetry for The Ballad of the Harp Weaver. She also married Eugen Bezeman, a Dutch coffee importer, and they were also known to have an open marriage. She and her husband owned 700 acres in the Berkshires and an Austerlitz that I spoke of earlier called Steepletop, which was taken from the name of a wildflower. And that was her sanctuary. That was her outpost. She survived by her journals and letters that I spoke of earlier that gained amazing insight to her thoughts and style. And in one of Vincent's journals, she spoke as a young girl moving to a new home. "The yard was infinite. In the back, it ran down to the marshes. But in the front, it was infinite with something else, which I had never seen and which I suddenly came upon in the grass there, was a much like a voice as a flower. Years later, I learned it was called Narcissus poeticus." So I found that to be quite lovely that she discovered the Narcissus poeticus in the front of her home. And again, because I love her poetry so much and was inspired by it, this one more excerpt from Journey. She wrote, "The world is mine, blue hill, still silver lake, broad field, bright flower, and the lovely white road, a gateless garden and an open path, my feet to follow and my heart to hold." So her take on the world was infinite, unyielding, and definitely had a thirst to quench. She was inspired in her early days by living in Newburyport, Massachusetts, which was the seat of the abolition movement and home to one of the first female associations in the U.S. So all around her, imagine this world for women was changing, and it influenced and inspired her, and she became part of that change, and as my time has influenced and changed me. So it was a big deal that, you know, in the 19th century, when she was born, you know, women were supposed to be pious and submissive. So I'm sure that the Years of Newbery Report had to have a pretty big influence on her. Her poems and fame, to me, were a precursor to the folk music and peace activism of the 1960s. And that's what drew me into reading about her, that she had America's attention and she knew just how to get it by being her bold self. She smoked. She was headstrong. She had lovers. She revolted against convention. Emancipated and a poet, people loved her. She inspired women who rose up and took their pen and paper to write poetry and their expression of the new world that was unfolding. So I see so many comparisons to my own early need to write folk songs inspired by Pete Seeger, Joni Mitchell, Joan Baez, Bob Dylan, you know, the Vietnam War, Nixon. Like a song once written, it takes on a new meaning as it's carried into the hearts and souls of the listener and reader. So she was definitely an inspired voice, a pre-war, post-war, and certainly what I understand, she was on the FBI list to watch. In 1936, she had two tragic events that happened. There was a fire in Sanibel, Florida, in a hotel that destroyed all her manuscripts. And fortunately, she had the power to recollect them by memory, but it did take many years and many disappointed versions and long, hard years to excavate and recreate those works from deep inside her mind. But later that year, there was an accident where she was thrown out of a vehicle, and that resulted in her long-term addiction to morphine and multiple unsuccessful surgeries. So pain and addiction were another theme right up to the end of her life. She was the most widely read poet of the time. And in 1934, I think her publication Wine from These Grapes sold 35,000 copies, and that was during the Great Depression. So enough to say she was widely read. I would have loved to have been in some of the packed halls to hear her own voice, because it was supposedly breathtaking and seductive, and everyone rushed to experience it. I did hear that there were some recordings later on made, but I think by then her addictions and drugs sort of kind of wrecked her voice, so that made it pretty difficult to actually hear these works preserved today. She wrote about the war. She wrote, "We put wreaths on the grave of the unknown soldier, who's pretty damn well known by now as a symbol of the next war." So she was very much involved in the movements of the time, the women's movement, the war. Certainly when Germany advanced and Paris fell to the Nazis, she was completely unglued by that. And she wrote a poem against isolationism because there still wasn't a rush for America to go into war. New York Times, Herald Tribune, Daily News all published this poem that she wrote called Lines Written in Passion and Deep Concern for France, Europe, and My Own Country. But it was landmark. It was the first important poem of World War II, and it was widely republished in newspapers throughout the U.S. She wrote in that piece, "No man, no nation is made free," by stating it intends to be. Meantime, the tide devours the shore. There are no islands anymore. And, you know, the critics didn't like her meddling. They found it was propaganda and not fitting up her voice as a poet. But her publisher in 1940s, seeing the power of her voice and the amount of times that her writing was being republished, published another volume of her poetry. So there was some really striking times. There was Anne-Marie Lindbergh, who wrote The Wave of the Future, which is basically a moral argument for isolationism. And then there was Millay's book from this publisher, Make Bright the Arrows. So both of these, two striking women in opposition. She wrote The Murder of Lidice, about a Czech village that was the Germans razed to the ground. And one critic said that he understood Millay to be a thinker, a ravaged observer of the human plight, not a pretty non-combatant, a delicate fashioner of pathetic parlor verse. And she had lovers that were very much outspoken, and one of them was an editor of the journal The Masses that was actually outspoken against the war and that also was shut down by the government under the Espionage Act for saying that they were trying to stop recruiting and enlisting of soldiers. So that was a very interesting point in her life. And it sounds very similar to her own Patriot Act and the rising of the Occupy Wall Street movement, which I think she would have been very much involved in. You know, FBI overstepping privacy rights and all in the name of war on terror. So, you know, in closing, I would say that she basically has been virtually forgotten in our time. And I understand that in 1976, even her name was left out of the New Oxford Book of American Verse. But to me, she was American Verse, so I find that kind of disturbing. And in 1950, she died due to a fall down a flight of stairs at the age of 59. And her sister Norma inherited Steepletop and lived there until her death in 1986. And would you believe everything there was preserved, her clothes, her letters, although Norma had admitted to destroying things she thought unworthy of her sister's history, she left everything exactly as it was. So thanks to Norma's preservation and also today the memory and work of the St. Vincent Millay Society at Steepletop, which is now a living museum, the world of St. Vincent Millay can still be heard.
And what is it about Edna St. Vincent Millay that inspires you so much?
Well, you know, the importance of letter writing and journaling, first of all. You know, isn't it funny? I journal, I blog, but I've been doing a lot of it on the computer. I also back up, you know. So, you know, the thing is, I'm thinking about Norma preserving all this amazing history of her sister, Vincent. You know, but who will find our hard drives? You know, that might be impossible to open. Whereas, you know, a handwritten letter or journal saved might be the only legacy one can leave behind. So I think her inspiration to me was her importance of expressing her voice. She grew up in the dawn of emancipation, and she lived through these crazy wars that allowed her to speak out. And she was sort of, her critics were really against her. They wanted to keep her as a poet, but not as this person speaking out in a possible propaganda-like way. And for me, that was inspiring to me, because also as a songwriter, I write songs of my heart and my soul and my consciousness that sometimes people say are too lightweight, or they're not really expressing what needs to be said and not really dignified of a songwriter, and should keep that to the side. But my activism and my songwriting is as much important as my writing about my loves and my the way I see the life. So so that to me, I guess, is that inspiration. And her beginnings, strong mother. I too had a strong mother who through loss of her husband, my father, was able to sacrifice for her children and teach that there was important things in life to learn about, and that's important for me.
And what book would you recommend to listeners so they can become as inspired by her as you have?
Well, my obvious would be Savage Beauty by Nancy Milford, because she's the one that I discovered back in the late 1990s. And she traveled in 1972 to Steepletop and met with Norma and got Norma to agree to let her excavate all these documents and spirit them away, tens of thousands of documents. And so that's what created this book about the life of this woman who, you know, was not only the most celebrated woman of her time, but, you know, she chose to be involved in everything. She was translating Baudelaire. She was presiding over the Guggenheim Fellowship Board. I mean, when she was on the fellowship board, she made a point to write to the board and say to the foundation, "We may not foster the conservative at the expense of the experimental, the solid at the expense of the slippery. We must take chances. We must incur danger. Otherwise, we shall eventually become an organization that gives prizes for acclaimed accomplishment, not fellowships for obscure talent, tangible promise, probable development, and possible achievement." So she, to me, represented that headstrong, emancipated woman of the 20th century that launched us into the 21st century. So I think that Nancy Milford did an amazing job of excavating and recreating Vincent's life and times, and I'm fascinated by how art transforms in life, and Vincent's celebrity through her poetry, and followed through her poetry, her, you know, how she crafted them, and then her death and her legacy, and, you know, maybe obscure and forgotten, but for a few, I think that this book is a must-read. I also want to recommend music by the group the Edna Project, and that's led by husband and wife musical team Liz Queller and Seth Farber, who put music to Edna St. Vincent Millay's lovely poetry. And there's a couple of my favorites, Still Your Orchards Bear, Wraith, and The Penitent. This is like her words set to edgy, sometimes sultry Americana melodies. So I love the Edna Project. So that's also while you're reading Savage Beauty, you can be listening to the Edna Project.
Well, there you have it for Edna St. Vincent Millay. Kathy, thank you so much for sharing her story with us.
You're so welcome. It was wonderful to share this amazing, remarkable woman.
To learn more about her story and other projects by Chick History, you can visit the website chickhistory.com. And please join us every week for another story of an inspirational woman in history.
I'm here to tell a story, something precious and fine, about a woman who made a difference with her life. She might not be known, but to only a few, her story remembered here is gonna change that view. Her history cannot be left behind. She shall not be forgotten. Her story not forgotten.